irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig right here on LA Talk Radio.
There you are.
There I am, finally.
Yeah, everything, you okay? Everything's starting to
Well, because the elevator, you know how slow it is in this building.
Yeah.
Right?
So you keep going.
I'm in the lobby waiting, and six people got in with me.
Yeah.
And they punched all the buttons. Of course, it's only four floors.
Right.
And then we didn't start on the main floor. We had to go down to the garage.
Oh, okay.
And wait for somebody who was getting a soda out of the machine to come back
in. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So I spent like 7-8 minutes in that process.
You could have run up and down the stairs half a dozen times.
I could have, yes. But I was already in. I thought, how long is it going to take?
We were actually talking about it's the game show losing elevator because the you know, when you hit a floor, it's not a lovely dulcet tone. It's like, you know, first floor, you know.
That's
so,
right.
And we found out that we actually do the same
reality thing.
Michael and I do the same thing. We pretend we're on a game show when we're alone in the elevator, which is kind of tragic when you think about
yes,
it.
Yes, it is.
Sort of, that's how empty
anything.
Our lives are.
Not for the people looking at the cameras.
Yes, right. The people on the cameras are enjoying
it. Oh, my goodness. Well, why don't we start off by thanking our sponsors?
Let's do that, Michael.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California, and we're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. There's some applause.
Yeah.
There we go.
Nice.
I love that studio audience.
You like that?
They love
yeah.
you too.
They're all, you know, it's a Randy group we have here.
Oh. They only kind of hang out.
Okay.
Oh,
all right.
That was my cousin. I'm sorry.
Mom.
Oh, well, here we go. Use every sound effect we have.
I am. It's all
there
I got.
Go.
It's all I got.
As you know, Paul, in studio with us today are two creative forces in the live arts community of Los Angeles. Critically acclaimed actor Michael Taylor Gray is here to talk about his co-starring role in the mature, steamy drama Tiger by the Tail, written by Frawley Becker and directed by Jules Aaron, now on stage through April 19th at the Distinguished Group Repertory's Lonnie Chapman Theater in North Hollywood. Welcome, Michael.
Well, I'm proud to be part of a mature and steamy production.
I would just love it. You know, it's come for the mature, stay for the steamy.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
That's right.
And on the other side of town in West Hollywood, director, writer, producer, actor Emmanuel Luarca. I have it correct?
Correct.
Has mounted a drama with comedy, song, and movement titled Under My Skin with co-writers Fernanda Milan and Victoria Garcia Pena. I tell
wow.
you.
Nicely great. Done, sir. Nicely done.
And I'm Italian, so I shouldn't really have this as closely as I do. I'm impressing myself.
I just hope I get yours
again?
Right.
Again?
Luarca, and of course, then I screwed up. Luarca also directs the production, which opens March 26th at the Macha Theater, with performances through April 30th. Emmanuel, thank you for joining us on State of the Arts. Delighted to have you here as well.
Yes, sir.
And
but
lovely,
before Paul, we
lovely to have both of them.
Yeah, before we start talking with our guests, I just want to ask you how was your week?
My week was good. As you know, I can make the formal announcement now.
Really?
I am doing the role of Von Hustler as well as various other.
Did you say a hustler?
Von Hustler.
Oh, Von
that's what
Hustler.
I heard.
Yes. yes, in the new all male production of Mary Poppins. Yes.
Very steamy too.
Von Hustler.
Von Hustler and Flo.
Yes. Midnight Mary Poppins, it's called.
Mary Poppins After Midnight.
Mary Poppins After Midnight. No, I'm at the Cabrillo Music Theater, and what a fantastic group of people out there. Lewis Wilkenfeld, the artistic director,
yes.
and directing this production.
Indeed.
And as I said on Facebook earlier today, I am surrounded by primarily younger Brilliant dancers and singers that I hope to Christ know CPR.
Younger because, than you?
Yes. Yes. Yes, they're, yeah. I actually was standing between two dancers last night and it occurred to me that their combined age was still almost 10 years less than me.
Now, are you there like in your dance belt, in your tights, in your
Actually, I wear it and they ask me not to. Oh. No. I'm not doing a lot of dancing in this.
Well, you're playing a bad guy.
I'm playing a bad guy. Yeah. And
works in the bank with Mr. Banks.
Well, he goes to him for a loan.
Okay.
And some other small roles, but a lot of, you know, the thing is that the singing is so rich in this and so embroidered and so layered and the harmonies are so complex and the dancing is so difficult that there's and really intricate dancing, I mean, bordering on gymnastics a lot of time when you think about the step in time and things like that. So there's a lot of supportive singing that's going on, a lot of offstage singing going because these dancers are just going to be so winded in order to sing, you know, the same time. So there's a lot of us sort of, you know, who are support staff in the singing department.
Well, that's good. And this is kind of a return to the musical theater for you. After
25 years. Yeah, 25 years.
It's been 25 years.
It's been 25 years, yeah. So
why the rush?
Well, you know. Unfortunately, I've been auditioning that whole time. No, I'm kidding.
Well, and you know, the Cabrillo Music Theater, of course, is at the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza.
The Fred Kavli.
Beautiful theater.
Gorgeous space.
Huge, 1,700 seats, I think it is.
And only 9 shows. They just do a very, very tight run, and but they always get an incredible response. The community support is really staggering out there. Yeah. How about you? How was your week?
Well, good. I attended the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Awards on Monday night, which was always a great event, and it had a lot of kind of subtext to it, of course, with the whole equity situation going on, and the proposal for April 19th, the day that your show closes, this bill is supposed, you know about this, of
yes.
course. That's a, you know, everyone's looking toward that day, what's going to happen, but I understand a march has been organized actually on Monday.
Really?
Yeah. I think by Equity, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
I don't know exactly the details, and this was just hearsay to me last night. I was at the Amundsen Theater for the opening of Cinderella, which I'll talk about later. But, it's getting heated, but I think that it's not going to go through.
Devastating. I'm hoping that they arrive. So we were actually talking about this before the show, because we had all this free time before the show. kidding.
But I'm
glad somebody did.
Yes, sitting on the elevator. I think the primary issue is that it does need to change, but the surgery needs to be performed with a scalpel rather than an axe, and I think that's what's happening here. I think
it's
just going to.
Yeah, I like that.
You know. But we'll see. But let's, while we have this art form, and unfettered art form, we have two gentlemen here who are both, you know, actually, they're both Equity Waiver Productions, are they not?
That's correct.
They are.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Well, you know, for us, it's a little bit different because when you do stuff in Spanish, for some reason, even though you do it at the same theater, you charge the same thing, it doesn't amount to be whatever, you know, it is. So there's a lot of freedom in a way to do stuff in Spanish because then you don't have to, you know, comply to certain
really?
Rules.
Oh, really? Really? Well, that's
but
interesting.
But then, you know, when you're an actor, it's like, okay, you don't have insurance, you don't get, you know,
right.
points, you don't get weeks, you don't... I have a lot of friends from New York that will drop, you know, Equity because there was no work for them.
Right, right. No, yeah, that's a common problem in Chicago as well.
And here, I mean, you know, if Equity people want to work, they leave the union so that they can work. And many of the producers are gracious enough to actually pay larger salaries if they can.
Than required.
Usually the bigger theaters and so forth. But, you know, why not? I mean, I think we should keep the Equity actors working. But as I said last week on this show, we were talking about it. Equity should be concentrating on raising the price of the contracts of Equity members for actual Equity full-out Equity productions, instead of $300, $500, whatever it is on a regional basis.
Right, right.
That's where what they should be doing, don't you think? That's going to help the actor.
Well, and we also mentioned, I think we need to work on cultivating a theatrical community here in Los Angeles as well. I don't buy into the notion that Los Angeles is not a theater town. It very much is a theater town.
Right. Yeah.
Just because we're seen primarily as film and television doesn't mean that we're not theater as well, because there's as much theater produced here as more so than
I believe, more than New York and Chicago.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I mean, and if you just look at that for face value, then yes, we are a theater town, and we have to embrace that and then cultivate that in our communities.
Not only embrace it, but one of the other things we talked about, and we should talk about this, but get to what you guys are here for. But the idea of, I would say, having lived in both New York and Chicago, it's more difficult to get an audience to theater here in Los Angeles for a couple of reasons. The theater dollar is split farther, but also, as we talked about, you know, getting people back in their cars on Friday afternoon is one of God's great mysteries, you know, to get them out to theater.
Just you know? Geography, yes.
Yeah, but that's what it is.
Yeah, did you know that?
Well, I live in the heart of Hollywood.
You didn't realize it was God's fault.
No, I didn't. Please send us some audience.
I know. And I had to get to the theater in North Hollywood from the heart of Hollywood when the president was in town. And boy,
oh yeah,
was just, that a lesson in patience.
Without a hovercraft.
Yeah, I felt like you in that elevator. I felt like I was in Sartre's No Exit. I was never going to get out.
Yeah. He did make it to the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Let's get to these. We'll start with the gentleman to your left. Michael, as an actor, our first guest was last seen in La Familia di Emmanuel, an autobiographical solo piece, awarded Audience a Choice Award as Best Play, and he himself was honored as Best Actor at the Bilingual Foundation for the Arts Festival in Los Angeles, with performances in Mexico, Guatemala, New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and the Dominican Republic, and Naperville, Illinois. No, I just added
Naperville. No, but I would like to go.
He continues to be honored for his work, which has been cited as exceptional service in the public interest. As we mentioned earlier, his latest endeavor, Under My Skin, which celebrates the joy of culture and unbreakable faith and the power of acceptance, will be presented by Akabal Theater in association with the Macha Theater in West Hollywood, March 26th through April 30th. Say hello to Emmanuel Lorca.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you teach speech classes?
Michael and I have this passive-aggressive thing that we do when we assemble these, is that whatever is more difficult to pronounce, the other person gets the assignment.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it works.
Yeah, I wrote the 5 years. So. Ago. Yeah, yeah. Michael's given me, like, friggin' Dutch before trying to figure this out. Anyway, Emmanuel, a pleasure to have you on.
Yes,
very, very excited to talk about your project.
I'm actually really, really, really happy to be here sharing our work in English, because, you know, we do a lot of stuff in Spanish, and this is a great opportunity to share our stories in English, so thank you.
Oh, and you're welcome. But don't you also have, at the play itself, subtitles in English and Spanish?
Yes, we do both. We have 3 monologues that are in English and 3 that are in Spanish, and then we have supertitles for both.
Fantastic.
Oh, so the production itself is also in both languages,
yes.
And it flips as needed.
Yes, it's the first monologue per se is in English, then the second in Spanish, then the third in English, things like that.
How is that dynamic with an audience in terms of a slight delay? I mean, because when people have to, in effect, are reading subtitles as though they were watching a foreign film, is there a discernible lag time in response? I guess it would be more a factor in a comedy, and this is not a comedy.
Well, you know,
it has comedy elements.
It does. Yeah. It's a dramedy, really. Okay. You know, in New York, we do this all the time, as you know, and to me, to do that, it's just easy. That's what we do. We've done plays where you speak English and Spanish with the same script both times, you know, and you have to work on it. I think that for me as a director, what I try to do is like to make sure the play is staged and the acting is just so raw and true that the language doesn't matter.
Okay.
And I let the audience choose if they want to read it or just look at it.
Okay. Now, what is it? Can you give sort of, for our listeners, sort of a synopsis of this? I read in the promotional material that it's almost like a performance art piece as well as a piece of theater. Is that an accurate description?
Well, I wanted to do, you know, one of my teachers used to tell me that actors, when they do monologues, it's kind of like a graduation. And I wanted to do it. I was so afraid to do it. And when I finally did it, I think it's just so, so beautiful how you could do all of these things by yourself, but also needing a team. So this piece is a celebration of that, celebration of of the art of monologues, and how the other ones, you know, become kind of like the background and you know, the use of everything to showcase that one person at that one moment.
But is there a structured narrative throughout? I mean, does it actually tell a story, or is it...
Well, we all in a wedding. The play was part of One City, One Pride Festival, LGBT Arts Festival last year, and their theme was I Do. So most of the pieces are geared to the marriage equality, but they're all from the Latino perspective. Most of the writers are from Latin America. One of them is in exile in Europe. And it's about her story of finding love and trying to find her place in the world and running away for her activism. So we try to talk about all of those things. And if you would say they're all guests at this character's wedding, and we get to see each what they're thinking. Basically.
Oh wow! See, that's one of the things.
I was going to say. So it also encompasses dealing with intolerance and believing in yourself and moving forward and standing on your beliefs and all of that, right?
Because
homophobia, everything.
Well, because you know, for American people, and when I mean American, I mean here in the States, it's easier for some reason. You know, the acceptance for difference when it comes to sexuality, it's more open. When it comes to Latin America, because the faith is so strong, because the culture is so strong, because the machismo is so strong, it plays a different outcome when it comes to us and what we live and what we want to do. So with this play, what we wanted to talk about was how all of those rich, beautiful things that make us unique also harm us when it comes to this issue. So we wanted to find a way to share, to understand, and to grow from them when it comes to how do we deal with homophobia, how do we deal with transphobia, what is transphobia, what is transgender, you know, all of those things. And I wanted to share that with our community to share some light for them and for us. For us, it's been an incredible journey.
There are three people who are credited for writing this. Is it was it workshopped? Did people share write around their personal experiences, or did you sort of define the story first and then, you know, go? I'm always curious about the creative process in building something like this. Did you know it was going to be at a wedding and then collectively write it? Did people write different pieces and then all come together? How did that work?
Well, first, I have never in our theater company, we have never talked about this subject. We have talked about domestic violence, human rights, prostitution, and I was always afraid of this subject because this subject is always depicted as, you know, a comedy relief. You know, you really like something really big, you know, and it was always about the sexual aspect of it versus the human experience. So when I have a couple of pieces that talk about the subject, and I was never free to present it. When One City, One Pride happened, we needed to do some pieces about the I Do. So I started to see what can I write for that. I saw a couple of pieces that I have before, and then I've seen these other piece from the Uruguay. It's called Proof of Love. She's a lesbian writer from Uruguay, and her piece, it was not for the theater, but I loved it so much. It was just perfect, and she's just a wonderful writer. And
Or a piece of poetry, or what?
An essay, and it was read in different universities. And that piece in particular, it talks about health issues. She's a woman who find out she's a lesbian, and she didn't know. But the thing with her is that because she's a lesbian, she didn't want to get herself checked because she didn't feel comfortable with somebody checking, you know, her privates because of her identity. So the piece talks about that, talk about cancer, talk about health prevention, and how it's different from her in Uruguay than it's in here. For example, the other pieces are... I call her. She's a friend of ours. I know she's a talented writer, and I ask her, this is what we need to do. I call her in the morning. At night, I had the piece already, La Diva, ready to go. And it's so powerful. It's so deep because it talks about how she left the country, why she left the country, and most beautiful, after all of this crap that she went through and the character goes through, you know, she finds love, and she looks for love, and that's what keeps her alive.
You know, that's one of the things that we don't talk about, and I think it's sort of this a cultural exclusion that we have, or cultural arrogance that we have as Americans, because, you know, that we have a tendency to, especially issues of homophobia or racism or things like that, we have a tendency to only view it how it affects us here. And when you what you were talking about earlier, I'm ashamed to say that I never really thought about that. Latino culture, you know, you mentioned machismo and that whole thing, and how much more difficult it must be for a gay man, just in this particular case, a gay man to deal with that when it's so... when the culture is so embroiled with that, it's
devastating.
Different. Yeah, no, I can't even imagine that.
Because you know, you have no role models to follow, because everybody that is that what is depicted in the society as fun, as you know, liberal, as sexual things, you know, right. You don't have role models, and when it comes to that, then you know who's raising you, then who is going to give you a good example to follow. And I think it has to do with, you know, eternal life. It has to do with the fact that in the culture already itself, women are, you know, less off, and mm-hmm. and yeah. men who pretend to be or act like are less than. And it happens also, I think, in the African American community,
oh, sure.
where it's so hard
yeah.
to, you know,
Well, especially if your faith is important to you, when you add the layer of faith to it and Catholicism and where Catholicism sits, you know, on that subject, which we've seen a little bit, you know, happily with this last pope. We've seen the first even bits of tolerance being spoken of, maybe not acted on, but at least being spoken of. So that's a whole other thing. If your faith isn't important,
well, you know, I grew up Christian, and you know, for my mother, me just getting into acting was already a sin. You know, because there's prostitution, there's drugs, there's homosexuality, and there's all these horrible things about it.
Where exactly is this? I'm gonna get a pen here. Because I've done a lot of equity waiver here, and I didn't encounter any of that. I probably would have taken my $9 an hour for that part. I don't mean to make light of it.
No, but it's true. Yeah. But it's true. You yeah. know, I think, you know, just being in this room with all this, with all of you who are creative, who do all this work to empower our community, you know, I mean, so what? There's people that are homosexual. You know, there's that in everywhere, in every right. profession. In my case, you know, it was really difficult because I know of a lot of people, a lot of my friends, that they were professionals, they were in the late 40s, they had everything, you know, a person could have in life, but still were living a closeted life yeah. because, you know, they can, because it's not acceptable, because it's, you know, I can, and a this and a that. And I was like, wow, that's supposed to be difficult, and I don't want to be there.
Right.
You know, I want to change, or I want to change everything I can do for to not be there, and for people not to be there.
They had everything but themselves. They had everything except their true identity, and
you know, a good example of that in the theater world, in the musical theater world, is Lorenz Hart, who you know was partnered with Richard Rodgers, and he exactly lived exactly like you just explained. I mean, he had everything. Yeah. He was the toast of Broadway, yet
Cole Porter
life.
Too, right?
Right, but yeah. I think Cole was probably a little less concerned about it than Mr. Hart was.
Right.
It was tragic, you know, for him. So
there's an astounding book by Frank Langella called Dropping Names, where he just shares stories with it's basically just anecdotes of mm-hmm. him with famous people, and there's one that touches on that, and buy the book and listen to it, but it's a conversation with him and Noel Coward that is just pretty astounding.
And if you go see that play, you were seeing in the story Silent Tie, it's just that.
Oh, yes.
It's about religion, just that, about religion and how you have to choose between your faith and the love of the person that you choose to be with.
Well, we should tell them how to go see this.
I'm going to do that now, and we'll obviously throw this out there a number of times before the end of the hour. This is at the Matcha Theater Under My Skin, Under Your Skin. Would you remind me of the title?
Under My Skin.
Under My Skin. Forgive me, it was not on this page. The Matcha Theater is at 1107 North Kings Road in West Hollywood. You can find them on Facebook.com, Acabal Teatro, and you can go to Brown Paper Tickets. I won't give you the lengthy URL. Just do a search for Brown Paper Tickets. .com, or you can call 917-689-4567. That's 917-689-4567. This opens March 26th, plays through April 30th. It's Thursdays at 8. Tickets $25 once again.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
Excuse me.
And six beautiful performances.
Seniors, student groups.
In a beautiful theater, by the way.
Yes. A lovely theme.
And you have a notation here for a mature material. So 18 plus is preferred.
There's no nudity. There's few cursing, but nothing that has not been on TV.
He's right. Got the nudity in his show over here, so we'll talk about that.
We got that covered, so to speak.
We've got that uncovered.
Yes.
It was a talk about a selling point one time.
Well, that sounds totally fascinating.
No, that does. That does. And once again, we'll throw that out there again. But for now, Facebook.com, Akabal Teatro, that's AKABALTEATRO. I always have to say theater with the RE spelling, but now it's a completely different thing. I did a Maria Irene Fornes show, Lovers and Keepers, at the Teatro de Hispano in Miami. And that was the last time I saw Teatro, but I'm just reminded of it right now.
Good.
Yes.
So, Michael, we don't have an arts calendar this week.
We do not, because we have a review.
Oh, we do?
We do.
You have a review?
I do have a review.
You were an active theater goer. What did you
I was, as I said at the top of the show, I was at the opening of Cinderella, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella last night.
Oh, really?
At the Amundsen Theater.
Yeah.
And what, you know, one would think, oh, it's going to be very pleasant and very nice, not too much of anything more than we believe it is or have known in the past that it was. Well, it was just the opposite. They have taken this show, certainly with the permission of the estates of Rodgers and Hammerstein, and made it move into dialogue-wise into this time period. Not completely. They throw it in when you least expect it to happen by these characters, and they've also written a few subplots with, for example, one of the Ugly Stepsisters actually has a relationship with somebody that she shouldn't be having a relationship with, and the mother doesn't know about it. So all of these lovely things come into the play.
Wow.
The young prince is not just, the parents aren't just looking for him to get married, but he's looking for something much more than that. And it's one surprise after another, and of course the music remains the same. But the set was extraordinary, and all of the company did such an amazing job, including one Miss Fran Drescher, who plays the fairy godmother.
I thought that was Bruce Valanche. No, I'm sorry.
That's in another production.
Often mistaken for each other. Often.
That's in person on the street.
How did Fran's voice hold up? I mean, I would imagine that would get a little strident after a
I'll
little while.
I'll tell you that if I had anything to criticize about this production, which I really don't, but it would be a little bit of Fran Drescher goes a long way. with the vocally speaking, and she is older now, but she still looks dynamite and has a wonderful physical appearance.
And she's done this role before, right?
She did it on Broadway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she did it. She didn't create it on Broadway, but she did step into the role. But her voice has gotten lower, and it is still, that whiny kind of voice, but now it's in a lower register, and it is hard to understand her.
Really?
Even though she's mic'd, but it just kind of gets a little irritating after a while. Huh. But overall, I should say, by the end of the evening, I actually enjoyed what she turned in on the stage. She had a very unique take on this role.
Right.
And the fairy godmother was a beautiful, voluptuous, older black woman.
Oh, really?
Who flew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in the show. And just had a killer voice, so she was singing some great stuff. And the young lady who plays Cinderella, whose name is Paige Faure, F-A-U-R-E, did an amazing job. What a gorgeous singer. And the prince's name in this production is Topher, which is short for Christopher. Andy Huntington Jones. The two of them together were so magical and so well cast in this. Just amazing. So I urge anybody out there listening to this program today, take your children, take your family to see this. It's certainly still a family affair, but it's a much more interesting one because it's kind of brought into, this time period and some of the language that we speak. It was all done by Douglas Carter Bean, who redid the script. So it's at the Center Theater Group. Just go centertheatergroup.org, and it's playing for the next several weeks, and see Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella.
All right.
Yeah.
It's
fun.
Good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Would you introduce this gentleman to my right, Michael?
I will.
Mr. Gray?
I will indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest earned his Actors Equity membership doing theater in Los Angeles in notable plays such as Del Shore Southern Baptist Sissies, Pageant, the musical comedy, Beauty Contest,
The Bacchae.
All right, thank you for that. And most recently, Bitch Slap, that I can say. In which
say it again.
Bitch Slap.
Actually, it was originally called Bitch Slap the Bacchae, but they shortened it.
For me. Yeah. In which he played Hollywood icon Joan Crawford. TV appearances include Without a Trace and Will and Grace. Film appearances include director Bill Duke's Not Easily Broken. He's currently co-starring on stage now in Tiger by the Tail through April 19th at the Group Repertory. Lonnie Chapman Theater in North Hollywood. Please welcome Michael Taylor Gray.
Oh, that studio audience is so lovely.
Aren't they lovely?
Give them a little tablet when they come in.
They drop a tab of acid before they come in. They're so enthusiastic.
I loved Emmanuel.
He's joined the studio audience. That's so kind of him.
Please do that for me again? I'm going to play this. Emmanuel, please do that again.
We love you, Michael! Oh, I'm your biggest fan.
Awesome.
And he plays the drums.
Michael Taylor Gray, working over at the wonderful Group Repertory Theater in the Lonnie Chapman Theater, which is also one of my favorite theaters to go into. It's so comfortable. And
very much like the
Matcha Theater, same thing. I love that space.
Yeah, it's a great space.
So,
and they've been there forever, too.
Yes, they have. Yeah. And boy, they are a company that cares about that theater. You know,
very much so. They're very, very hands-on. It is like walking into a family. I did a show there about 10 years ago called Greetings. And my friend Larry Eisenberg is the co-artistic director there.
Sure.
And he's the one that brought this play, Tiger by the Tail, to my attention. And so it's great to be back and working in that kind of community.
Michael, you were saying earlier before we started that, and we touched on it in reading your bio here, that you've got some heightened stuff in your past, some of the characterizations you were talking about. And this is an incredible departure from that. Can you sort of describe what maybe a little synopsis and what sort of people can expect from this very touching tale, it sounds like?
Yeah, I mean, people, like you said, I'm very proud to say that I got my equity card doing Equity Waiver Theater here in Los Angeles. And I've been fortunate to be part of some wonderful productions and playing characters like Iona Traylor in Southern Baptist Sissies and Miss Deep South in Pageant and Joan Crawford in Bitch Slap. So I've played a lot of really interesting characters, some of them women, some of them kind of over the top and very theatrical. Oh. So to get the opportunity to play a 45-year-old therapist based in Los Angeles who has done very well for himself, but has had a couple of failed relationships with a woman and a man, and is in that point in his life where he's kind of bored and really wondering if he's ever going to find love. And so he's in Pittsburgh at a conference, and he goes to a bar, and he picks up a free gay rag and finds this personal ad by some 28-year-old state prisoner in Florida. And there's something about this ad that just captures his imagination, and he responds. And it turns out that this young man writes like a 19th-century poet, and this particular therapist has such an affinity for language and literature and is fascinated by young people who are that mature and articulate. So he knows he shouldn't go there, but he does. And it's really, at the end of the night, it's really about how sometimes our expectations get shattered. And if we just accept things for what they are and embrace them for what they are, we can be amazingly surprised at how much love can actually come into our lives. And it's a real journey. It's a beautiful love story. It's so unexpected. And it is, every night is just, I just feel so grateful to be there.
And you were saying also beforehand that it's one of those things that we were talking about, you know, how these things grow and how they bloom, original works, that it the love story aspect of it maybe wasn't even initially the causal idea or the causal, you know, explain how that
is. That's correct. The love story aspect of it, which is really the main aspect of the play, is not even this mustard seed that was planted that became what it is today. Frauenbecker actually knew of a young man in the penal system in
this is a playwright?
Florida. Yeah, Frauenbecker, who's her playwright, who's a rich, look him up. Frauenley Becker. Look him up online because he's a rich history in the entertainment community. Mm-hmm. In the 50s, he was a dialogue coach with Rex Harrison, Audrey Hepburn, all these amazing people. And he's done it's rich biography. Really, I'm amazed. But he knew of a prisoner in the state prison system when Jeb Bush was governor who died violently, very violently, at the hands of prison guards. In fact, he was so violently brutalized, there were boot prints imprinted in his skin. His bones were crushed. His organs were crushed. I mean, it was brutal beyond belief. Mm-hmm. And so out of that, there were these prisoners who like submitted all these poems that sort of kind of leaked out. And they weren't all necessarily, you know, beautiful literature pieces that they wrote, but they expressed their emotions and feelings in reaction to what had occurred.
Okay.
And out of that is the seed for this play. And then the love story, I think Frawley, we just had a talk back with our audience this past Sunday, and he said, I wanted to take the brutal violence of that world and juxtapose it with a love story, something so completely opposite, and see where that would grow and where it would go.
Right.
And then, because one of the prisoners in the play does meet a demise, without giving anything away. And that's sort of the kernel of the story, how it began. But the love story that has evolved into this play of Tiger by the Tail is really the most unexpected thing. I think he, as a writer, we talked about it earlier, sometimes a play starts writing itself. And I think at some point the love story took over and became the main storyline.
Yeah, so that first, I mean, I can't speak for this gentleman as a writer, but being a writer myself, it's like when you put the clay, once you get the, like, I hate writing. I love having written something, but I hate the actual act of writing. I don't mm-hmm. like to put the clay on the table, but I love to edit. So once the clay is on the table, I like to move it around. And I think it's, you know, that to me, they asked Kurosawa once, a great film director, they said, why do you make movies? And he said, so I have something to edit. Because that was, you know, that was his whole, you know, the creative process so happens there. Now, this particular gentleman, has he been active in, is this a West Coast premiere, right?
This is the West Coast premiere. It was it was first produced at Wings Theater in New York on March 24th, 2006. It's won a handful of awards at some various festivals around the country. And so it had a really solid six-week run off Broadway and got a tremendous response. And this is its first production here in Los Angeles. So there have been a handful of readings, from what I understand, over the years for it. But the Group Rep is the first theater in town in Los Angeles who really committed to presenting it full on and giving a full stage production. The set, the sound design, the lighting design, they didn't spare any artistic.
The production stills look
investment.
Astounding.
It looks
really beautiful.
And it's really wonderful as an actor to have all those elements supporting the work that we do on stage.
Now, you mentioned the gentleman in, or rather the character in the show, 45-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
Without giving offense, you look to me to be approximately that age, around 45.
The lighting here is terrible.
It's fluorescent.
But I'm
48, and I'm proud. I'm
48.
Yeah.
Okay, see,
really?
It was a compliment. You
well,
see?
I don't think he looks 45. I think he looks much younger than 45. Well,
Mike and I would be going out for a nice dinner after the show.
He actually shared
I still
with me
love you,
how old he was. But the similarities. Do you find when you're playing someone, you know, as we mentioned earlier, some of the other characters are a little more heightened, and when you come to someone who seems very based in reality, is it, how poignant a journey is it for you?
Well, let me tell you this.
And where does the nudity come in?
Well, that's after the show, honey.
Not today.
The poignancy before nudity. You always with the nudity.
It's in the prison scene. I only show my elbows. That's as much skin as I show on the show as my elbows.
Really?
Damn it. Yeah, okay. I know. I'm working on it. Can I take my shirt off?
But let me just say
that
they're fine elbows.
Just looking
for
at
48.
Them now. Just looking at yeah. them now.
Think about it. Collectively, your elbows are 96.
And collectively, they can do a lot of damage. So you better
zip it, Mister.
This is truly, truly one of those moments where, and I don't say this lightly to sound corny, but where art imitates life, imitates art. I mean, this character, the journey that he's going through emotionally, and the things that he's considered, it's so universal. I mean, I'm 48 and recently single within the last 6 months. And so, you know, I'm contemplating a lot of the things that my character Jerry is contemplating. And it's just fascinating what that does. And I'm playing a therapist who's in therapy. And I personally am in therapy. And so my therapist is going to come see the show. I've insisted that she comes to the show.
And the two fronts are going to meet, and it's going to start raining right in the theater.
I know. It's just locusts, and it's going to be the Book of Revelations if you're a Christian. You know what that means. So, it's unbelievable. There's just so much that I personally am getting out of this. And as a side note, not really a side note, but Jules Aaron, who is, I think, one of the most prolific stage directors in Los Angeles history, he's directed more shows than God has created, I was a student of his at CalArts. 23 years ago, he directed me in a show. And to get the opportunity to work with him again 23 years later, you know, as an adult, it's a real gift. And he's a real craftsman. He really got me to settle down physically and emotionally, and his specificity in the scene work that he does. We had to be off book for the first act by the end of the first week, off book for the second act by the end of the second week. There is a lot of dialogue, and it's very rich, very intelligent, very lot of literary references. It's not easy to memorize.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a real love of language going on. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And he does that. He wants us off book right away so that we can really dig in to the work and really, really get into these characters. And we ran that show. We did a run through at the end of our second week.
Wow.
I mean, most people don't, you know, for a production, stage production, sometimes, you know, don't do their first full run through to like your first tech rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. That always drives me crazy doing a show, because you'll have those really committed people who will get there and be ready to go, especially when you're working on a comedy. Mm-hmm. And then you get those one or two cast members that just drag their feet, and I'll learn it. It's like, yeah, well, that's fine when you learn it. But we can get no rhythms. We can get no musicality. We can get no cadence and no sense of flow when every time the ball's thrown to you, it's dropped with line, line, line. You know, that drives me crazy.
Well, there's a company of nine actors, and if you don't mind, let me just say their names real
quick. Oh, please do.
Michael O'Neill Callahan, Bob McCollum, Stephen West, Marco Antonio Parra, Lloyd Peterson, Todd Andrew Ball, Lorene Fay, and David Bezzotta. And it's such a wonderful community of actors that are so sharing and caring and giving and trusting. I was really fortunate in that everybody raised their game and pulled their weight and did their best to be off book and get those lines on so that we could really get to the work. Yeah. And it's been wonderful, and it continues to be.
No, it sounds it. It sounds it. Michael, why don't you tell people how they can see it?
I will do that. Again, we're talking about Tiger by the Tail by the Group Repertory Company at the Helani Chapman Theater in North Hollywood. And it is in progress now, March 6th, and it opened, and it plays through the 19th of April, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., Talk Back Sundays after the matinees, March 15th and April 5th. So you have
April 12th. I think they changed it to the 12th.
Oh, okay, April 12th. That's coming up. Reservations are easy, folks. You simply go to thegrouprep.com or 818-763-5990 for tickets. And a running time, 120 minutes, includes one intermission. That's not bad.
Perfect.
Mature material, nudity.
And steamy.
Yes,
and steamy.
And strong language.
Yes.
18 plus only, by the way, folks. And the Lonnie Chapman Theater, 10900 Burbank Boulevard in North Hollywood. Ample street parking on Burbank Boulevard and Cleon Avenue south of Burbank. And, you know, come early, allow time to park in Los Angeles. It's always a little bit of a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, of these cast members that you mentioned, who exactly is nude?
No, I'm kidding.
How old?
It's a coin toss from night to night.
It's a coin toss. Yeah. Oh, hey, it's that time, Michael. We're at that
point.
It
is that time. We have to baptize you now.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We do.
Oh,
we have
my second baptism.
Ask to share a tale of woe, a theatrical mishap, a theatrical misstep, something that went wrong during performance. Oh, Emmanuel, you want to start? Do you have
Sure. One time we were doing a tour of Midsummer Night's Dream, and the director had a brilliant idea of having all the male doing the female roles and all the males doing the male roles. So we were all like, you know, fun. And we were doing this tour, and then the two actors decided to use this scene, use the balcony of the theater, and they never told me. So my scene is following them, and I know that in this space they needed to go two floors down, get changed, go two floors up to be in that scene.
Oh, wow.
And I'm waiting on the side, waiting, and then the director is also acting on the other side, waiting, and I'm counting 1, 2. When I get to 10 and they're not on the scene, I'm like, okay, they're probably still changing, and I have to go on. So I went on, and as soon as I'm starting, I see them, they start as well, like maybe a second later. Maybe a second later, and I'm thinking, oh God, please don't let him come down, you know. And then they're coming down, and then I'm like, oh God, please don't let him come through the audience. And then they're coming through the audience, and I'm like, please don't let him come on stage. And then they're come on stage, and the other actress, a friend of mine, who she gets laughs all the time. If something happens on stage, she starts laughing, and then there's no stopping her.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, please don't let her laugh, don't let her laugh. And then I thought, I'm playing Titania, right? I think, is that how you say it in English? Titania?
Yeah.
Titania. And she's supposed to be a fairy. No, they're not supposed to see her. Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, I have immunity. I could be here. You know, I could
I
be here.
Survivor.
You know, so I pull to the side.
I have fairy immunity.
Yes. Yeah. So I pull to the side, and I'm thinking, okay, how do I fix this? They end the scene, and before my dialogue, I said, and of course, you cannot improvise in Shakespeare.
Right.
And but, you know, I had to do it. So I said, what kind of things do you see in the forest? You know, and I went on, you know, and then the director set us down in a circle at the end because he wanted to have everybody's opinion about what had happened. And I'm feeling like crap, but I wanted to save the play, you know. Yeah. And then we went around and they're all giving opinions and he's mad. And then this other actor, friend of ours, who came to see the show, he was like, oh, by the way, I love that how you connected the stage with the balcony. Yeah. And how you took that scene to the other and you make it. And then I thought, okay. There's everything that could happen on stage will happen, and it's part of the show.
And it's part of the show. It's right. Part of the show. I thought for sure you were just going to start translating. That's what it is. Just start saying it in Spanish and just make it look like a public service. Michael, what do you got?
Well, I've never had fairy immunity, not even in West Hollywood. So I'm fascinated by fairy immunity. I'll go back once again to my CalArts days. And it was, I think, my second year, and we were doing Molière's The Imaginary Invalid. Don't ask me who I played.
Who did you play?
I have no idea right now. But I was in it. Yeah. I was in it, yeah. And so it was a two-character scene, me and one of my classmates. I won't name names, but his name sounds like Pat Kelly. And it was a black box theater on the fourth floor, you know, at school, and it's a very intimate space, and the audience is literally like right in front of you as you're walking in front of the playing the stage area. And I had that, you know, moment where I was in my head, and when you get in your head, your lines go on vacation. And so they went somewhere, and I stood there looking at him. Okay, and I'm thinking, okay, he's going to help. He's going to be there for me. He got this look in his eyes like, you are on your own, bitch.
Oh.
Right? And it is as his eyes, and he physically took 2 steps back away from me. Away! Not only did he show this look on his face like, you're on your own, he physically stepped away from me like, oh, ain't helping you. And I internally just, I said, I wanted to kill him. I thought he died 1,000 deaths in that moment. But somehow I found my lines, because how can you improvise, like you said in Shakespeare, how can you, same thing with Moliere, do you improvise?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so thank God they came to me, but I've never let him forget that.
I have never heard that before in my life, that someone would actually, knowing mm-hmm. that you're, mm-hmm. oh, that you're flailing.
Oh, honey.
What was his name again?
Sounds like Pat Kelly.
I'm going to take a step back to call more attention to
oh,
the
honey,
fact that
yes,
you're on
yes,
your own.
Yes, yes, oh,
wow.
It was a beautiful moment.
Oh, that's brutal. That's brutal. Oh, that's hysterical. What a pleasure, gentlemen.
Yes,
what a pleasure
indeed.
Having both of you here.
Thank you very much.
I love this card. It's very beautiful, right?
Thank you.
It's frameable, this card.
Thank you. That's the idea.
Michael's talking about the Under My Skin postcard promotional material.
It's an artwork done by Manuel Chitay for this play particularly. I wanted to use the heart because I wanted to talk about the heart and not the sex part, you know, but the heart. And it's all the colors for the transgender flag and the gay flag.
Beautiful.
Very nice. Nicely done.
We're talking about that is Under My Skin is the show that we're talking about. This is at the Matcha Theater at 1107 North Kings Road in West Hollywood. It opens March 26th, and you can call 917-689-4567 or visit facebook.com Akabal Teatro. That's AKABALTEATRO. That's for Under My Skin. What do they do for Tiger by the Tail
over at the Group Repertory, Repertory's Lonnie Chapman Theater in North Hollywood, now through the 19th of April. So they simply go on to thegrouprep.com for tickets or call 818-763-5990.
Gentlemen, a pleasure.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much
for spending the time.
Really enjoyed it. Right. This just flew this hour. So,
and also, Paul, thank you.
And thank you, Michael. And also, would you throw the information out there for Cinderella again?
Yes, of course. Andy? Center Theater Group, centertheatergroup.org, at the Amundsen Theater, on stage now, Cinderella, the new Cinderella.
All right.
By Rodgers and Hammerstein.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.